Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
I might chip off, man. I got this, yeah.
So Park Si-hun from Mazan, Korea, and Roy Jones of Pensacola, Florida.
Well, if he doesn't win the goal off this, then I think there's something rotten in Korea, because that is absolutely one of the most dominant things I've seen.
The winner is on point, 3-2, in the blue corner.
Well, there it is. Park Si-hun has stolen the belt. And that is very difficult to figure.
Jones gets his vindication via a first round knockout.
And it was a left uppercut.
Unbelievably quick left-hand shot.
When you talk about how seldom he gets hit, he's the only fighter in CompuBox PunchStat history to have gone an entire round without being hit by his opponent.
You know, if Roy Jones win this fight, people are going to start picking on little guys, picking on Shaquille O'Neal.
So the predictions of those who thought that Roy Jones couldn't possibly last 12 rounds in the ring with a man who outweighs him by this margin proved empty and false.
We have a unanimous decision, all three in favor of the winner, joining boxing's elite, the new WBA heavyweight champion of the world, Roy Jones Jr.
There we are. So I'm delighted to welcome our next guest, a six-time world champion in four different weight classes, considered the best of his generation and beyond, the only boxer to ever start his professional career at light middleweight and go on to win a heavyweight title. Silver at Seoul in 88, one of the worst, most infamous decisions in the history of amateur boxing, and then fought professionally from 89 through to 2018. And now, 49 years old, hanging up his gloves. Roy Jones Jr., great to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me on, brother. How y'all doing?
We're great. So, you took your time hanging up your gloves. Are you happy that you've made the decision now?
No, not really. But, I mean, I'm good with it, but I'm not happy. I mean, you know, I still feel like I still can go somewhere if I want to, but I'm cool with it, you know?
What kept you fighting so long, Roy?
Just loved it. I loved it, and I still love it. So, like I said, I love it enough to be doing it now. But I understand, you know, that there is dangers in doing it, but I still can go right now. So, I love it, and I still have the urge to go right now even. So, you know, it's all good.
And what made you decide to give it up?
Well, it's just when you start having injuries and you have, you know, your different tendons start giving you problems, you know, it's probably time to start backing off some. So I'm ready to start backing off some now because I had a couple of tendon surgeries. And when you start having injuries, that's your body trying to tell you, okay, I'm having just about enough now.
At 47, 48, 49 years of age, how did your training compare to what you were doing maybe in your 30s or 20s?
Just had to train a little smarter. I mean, you train hard still, but just a little smarter than harder. So you got to train hard, but you got to train smarter. You can't wear yourself out like you used to because you don't recover as quick.
Pensacola, Florida was where you're from. Is that where you are now? It seems like you're pretty much in love with Pensacola. That's home.
Yeah, that's where I'm staying. I won't be going nowhere else, where I'll be at for a little while.
Did you ever think about leaving Pensacola?
Nope, never thought about it.
What is it about Pensacola that you like so much?
Just I want to always give kids their hope because when I was coming up, small town,
yeah.
And people thought, you can't make it as a boxer from Pensacola. That's not true. If you got God, you can make it anything from anywhere. And I wanted to prove that. And because I proved that point, I'm like, I built up such a fan base. So many people around the world know Pensacola because of Roy Jones Jr. So why would I ever leave it, you know?
How early, how young were you when you realized boxing was something you wanted to do?
I know I wanted to box when I was like 5 years old.
Your father seems to have been the big influence there, Roy Sr. He ran a boxing gym effectively for local kids, and obviously you were his son, so you were part of it, isn't that right?
I was the start of it, actually.
Right, okay, so he started with you.
Yeah.
And what did the early, like when you're 4 or 5, what kind of training are you doing?
Well, I didn't start when I was 4, but I didn't start until I got 10. I just knew at five I wanted to fight, but I actually started until I got 10. But we were training, we had 10, 12-hour days, we were training, I mean, you know, every day. Some day it went 6 hours, some day it went 9 hours, some day it went 12 hours, all depending on what day it was. On a weekend, most of the time, we got 12 to 14 hours out of it.
Whoa, you know? at 10 years of age?
Yep.
That is a lot. I mean, that must have been incredibly difficult.
Of course it will, but that's why I became the best pound for pound ever, because of the time I got put into the preparation.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that. People always say, I'm so talented. Nothing to do with the talent. When you got 14 and 12 and 14-hour days, it's not all about talent. It's about preparation and developing, you know? I developed. We went 10-hour days most of the time. Even after school, we start training at 5. We didn't finish to 10 or 12, you know? I mean, that's every day. We went from 5 to around 11, 30, 12 every night.
Yeah.
Now, we didn't have many 2 or 3 hour days. No, we had 5 and 7 hour days on average. And on the weekend, we did 10, 12, 14 hours, you know?
And did your father did your father know plenty about boxing to be able to train you?
Of course he did. That's how he was able to train us for so long.
Had he fought himself?
Yeah, he fought himself, yeah.
Okay, to a high standard or semi-high standard?
No, not a high standard. A lot like McGill's dad. They didn't have the best career, but in order to prepare us to have a better career than they had.
Yeah. Can I ask you to explain a quote I saw a while back about something you said about growing up and training, and like, I mean, God, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12-hour training days is tough. You said a couple of years ago about that period in your life, you said, after a while, I didn't care about getting hurt or dying anymore. I was in pain all day, every day. I was so scared of my father. He'd pull up his truck and start looking for something I'd done wrong. There was no escape, no excuse, no way out of nothing. Every day it was the same. School, homework, farm work, training. Get hurt or dying might have been better than the life I was living. So I turned you said, I turned into a daredevil. I would do anything. It didn't make much difference. I used to think about killing myself anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain what's going on there?
That explains it all. You just said, you just read it all. It was just, that's what it just said.
Well, so I mean, you're saying you were scared of your father.
Of course. That's, I meant exactly what the hell I just said. You just said it. I mean, everything I said, I meant.
Scared of him, why or how or for what reason?
Because, I mean, he going to give you a whooping for something you didn't do or anything you find, whatever you find to whoop you for. I mean, of course you're going to be scared.
Okay.
Your father came home every day looking for a reason to whoop your ass when you be scared. That's your father. He is your father.
Yeah. And why?
Okay, it meant just what it said.
I guess a lot of fathers wouldn't come home looking to give their kid a whooping, as you say, for no reason.
Well, that's a lot of fathers. I'll tell you about what I came up with. I won't tell you about a lot of fathers. I'll tell you about mine.
Yeah.
And what I said about mine is just what I said.
So would you describe it then as a bad relationship at that time?
Of course it was.
Yeah.
Just like it is now. It ain't changed.
Yeah. And, I mean, that must have been incredibly difficult to deal with. Like, so you say you turn into a daredevil. So what would that entail, or what would that mean?
Well, it's just that nothing really scared me, you know? I mean, what's going to happen to me? Maybe someone will kill me. Well, maybe that's not the life I was living, so what do I care? So it's like somebody showed up and said, hey, he's too heavy, and he don't have nobody to fight. I'll fight him.
Yeah.
You sure? Of course. Well, why not?
Yeah.
What are you going to do to me? That ain't already had done. And like, I don't get my ass whooped all the time at home by my dad, so what am I scared of? What are you going to do to me in the works? So when people say, you should move up and fight John Reeves, what the hell you mean I shouldn't fight John Reeves? What are you going to do? That ain't seen already.
Yeah. I guess you want to get away from that pretty... I mean, you can't keep having your dad coming home and get... you know, hitting you for...
Of course.
Yeah, so...
when I got old enough, I got to get away from it.
And what age was that, Roy?
Well, I was going to get away from it right after the Olympics, but my mom taught me something different, so I waited till I got about 21, 22, I think. Okay. Probably around 21, 22, I got probably 91. So I probably 22, yeah.
Okay.
At 22, I decided that was enough, because it came a point that I was ready to kill, and when I get to where I'm ready to kill, it's time to go. And, but I knew that already, because God had already had me prepared for that. But I found the opportunity where I was really killed. I said, okay, that's my one time again tonight.
Yeah.
And I did.
I guess I want to talk to you about your boxing career as well, but it's kind of hard to understand in some respects. Like, do you know why your dad was so violent? Did you ever talk to him about it? Did you ever try and say, here, listen, back off?
Nope. I never talked to him about it.
Why not?
Because I don't care. It was going to last for as long as it did. It lasted. Once I got out of it, that was the end of it. Once I got old enough to take care of myself, that was the end of it.
Okay.
One day it wouldn't happen no more, and that's what happened. When I got old enough to take care of myself, I ended it.
Yeah. And how good a fighter were you when you got to 16, 17, 18, 19?
Well, I was damn good. I was probably one of the best in the world at that age of it. You saw me at the Olympics, you saw how good I was. I won a Bell Box Cup, best amateur in the world.
Yeah. That was in 88. What age were you in 88?
19.
So was your dad in your corner and part of the camp at that stage? Yeah.
Yep.
So that was in 88 where you didn't lose a route, or you didn't lose a round even en route to the final.
No. Nope.
You were the clear winner in that fight against Park. I think you landed 86 punches to his 32. And it wasn't your hand that was raised at the end. Two of the three judges were banned for life. It was an absolutely horrific mm-hmm. thing to go through. Mm-hmm. I presume in the ring you just couldn't believe it.
No, I mean, I saw the council celebrate. I knew they had robbed me. I saw them celebrating outside the ring, so I knew.
And you got the Val Barker Trophy, so that's the last time a mm-hmm. non-gold medalist won it. Mm-hmm. So basically everybody knew it was a complete scandal.
Mm-hmm. Of course, and the bad part about it is 30-some years later, they still haven't changed it when they know it's wrong. Mm. So how can the integrity of a sport stay the same when you do a misjustice and you don't even go back and fix it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, even...
I should tell you right there.
Even in Rio, we saw terrible decisions. Like Michael Conlon fighting for yep. this country had a terrible decision. So, like, mm-hmm. in some respects, not much has changed in amateur boxing. You still see mm-hmm. terrible decisions. You turn pro then, and things, I mean, you took to it to a duck to water. I saw people describe your technique as pretty unorthodox, like you had that wide punch, your hands were low, your chin was forward sometimes. Like, how did you arrive at that technique, or how did you learn? Like, your father obviously taught you to fight, but it was an unusual technique. Obviously, it worked great, yeah. but it was unusual.
Yeah, well, coming up, I had game roosters. So I used to always watch my game roosters and think I would make one better than the other. Yeah. And so I would learn their fighting technique because it's a God-given thing. You can't teach them how to fight a certain way. They just fight natural because that's what God showed them and what God instilled in them. So I would watch those guys and figure out what made one better than the other with the things and with the attacking from different angles. And I learned those things. And I took them and put them in the boxing ring.
Wow. I've never heard anyone do that before.
Nope. That's why you only seen one Roy Jones ring.
And did your style change much across your very long career?
No, when I got older, my knees started going bad, so I couldn't do the movement that I used to do, and that's what really threw me off, because my legs were the biggest key to my career.
Right.
My knees got to where they were hurting so bad, I couldn't have the legs no more, and as I came back down from heavyweight, I think I pretty much depleted myself getting back down to light heavyweight, but I wanted to do set a new mark than what Bob Fitzsimmons had said. He was the first guy to ever be light heavyweight, middleweight, and heavyweight champ, and come back down and recapture the light heavyweight title. Well, I wanted to be the first guy to be the middleweight, super middleweight, light heavyweight, and heavyweight champ, come back down and recapture light heavyweight belt. And I did that. But people didn't understand it. But if I don't go back down and recapture light heavyweight title, I can't say I did what Bob Fitzsimmons did.
Okay.
After Bob Fitzsimmons won heavyweight title, he went back and recaptured the light heavyweight title. If you don't do that, then you didn't do the hardest part to do.
Yeah. You mentioned your legs going. So once they went, that altered your style massively. They were fairly integral. Your style was about movement more than anything.
Yeah, my legs were my key to my fight game.
Okay. The Hopkins fight, Bernard Hopkins in 93, you were 22-0. That was your first world title shot. I think you had a broken mm-hmm. hand in that fight. So we're talking like from a period where, like the Hopkins fight in 93 through to the John Ruiz fight in 03, where mm-hmm. you were the first middleweight in 106 years to win at heavyweight. How early did you decide you were going to try and go from, you know, light heavyweight, which is 11 stone, or light middleweight, 11 stone, 7 pounds, all the way up to heavyweight? When was that a thing you decided to do?
Never knew that until right before I heard to fight Clinton Woods, who's from your neck of the woods. I was going to fight Clinton Woods one night. I had a dream, and I said, you know, I think I should go fight for the heavyweight championship of the world. And so I woke up the next day. I went to Evander Holyfield in Atlanta and asked him to fight me. He said no. He went, and later he fought John Ruiz. He lost John Ruiz, and John Ruiz said, you know what, I'll fight, bro.
Yeah.
I said, perfect, there it is. I done beat up everybody in the middleweight division. I done beat up everybody in the super middleweight division. I done beat up everybody in the light heavyweight division. Why, next thing, you don't want to listen to heavyweight, so why not do that?
Yeah.
When he said he'd fight, I said, perfect, let's go.
You were 33 pounds heavier fighting John
mm-hmm.
Ruiz.
Mm-hmm.
Did that change things for you? What was that like?
No, that was perfect for me. I mean, it was a great thing. Like I said, the only thing that changed was to go back down and shake all the weight was a tough thing.
Okay.
That was tough, yeah.
In what respect did it change
it's kind
your...
It depleted your body at 36 years old. It kind of just depleted me.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
Like, but I won the title back first before I let it overtake me, you know?
Yeah, so...
I just took 2 or 3 year period off after that, and I didn't do that.
Okay. So it was
because I didn't realize the effect it had on my leg or my body at all, period.
Did it slow down your reflexes, or did it...
No, it just depleted my body of its natural strength. It's depleted me a lot of things, because I depleted so much, I lost 25 pounds of muscle, so it depleted the body.
So you lost your speed, you lost your strength, you didn't yeah. quite feel the same.
Yeah. But I still took the heart and won that title back, like from the time of it, like I was supposed to.
Mm.
But I should have took a 2 year break after that, and I didn't.
During your career, Roy, like, obviously, you know, like it's such a long period and it's such success for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
was a complete obsession with boxing? Like, were you meticulous with your diet? Were you meticulous with your lifestyle? Or did you party?
Wasn't meticulous. Nope. I wasn't a big party in no way, but I didn't eat stupid. I never smoked and never drank, so I was cool with that. But I wasn't so meticulous the way I had to watch everything I eat. You know, when I wasn't training, I eat normal food.
Okay.
I eat cake, ice cream, anything when I'm not training. But when I'm training, I knew that I disciplined myself to make weight and not do that.
Did you ever find
that? I wasn't so meticulous.
Yeah. It wasn't constantly obsessed. Did you ever find that the discipline difficult when you were in camp?
No, I was pretty easy to make because I'm the kind of person, I know what I want and I'm going to do what I got to do to get what I want.
What do you put that down to? Do you think you would have been that way anyway, or do you think it's to do with what your dad put you through?
It probably would. My dad put me through. I want to make sure I didn't fail. And I know the best way to not fail was to be disciplined, stick to my word, and I wasn't going back home. Once I left, I wasn't going back.
Yeah.
That meant I had to succeed. So he did do that for me. He put a fire in me and made me know that I have to succeed, or unless I like living the way that I was living with him, and I didn't like it.
Yeah, no.
So that's not going to happen.
I can imagine.
That's whatever can't help for me yet.
Yeah. And so across your, you know, you get out of there at 21 and you're having all the success as a fighter. Does your relationship with your father ever get repaired and improve? And do you kind of become friends almost, or is that distance there?
Still a lot of distance there, and there always be distance there.
Because you're angry at him?
No, I'm not angry. No. It's just always be distant because, you know, I don't trust very easy. And once a person do something crazy to me once, I don't trust you no more.
Did he ever apologize, or did he ever kind of say, listen, in hindsight, now that I think about it, wasn't great?
No. He never did nothing wrong. Let him get it. To this day, he still don't think he ever did a thing wrong.
Okay.
That's just who he is, which is cool by me. I just keep my distance and let him think like that.
Sure.
That's fine.
I understand. Like, when you're, you know, winning a world title and having all the success, would he try and reach out and say, hey, well done?
Nope.
Wow. Did you find that tough or difficult at the time, or were you sad about that or okay with that?
No. Well, how can you be sad when the man that taught you how to box is trying to train a guy to teach him how to go out and beat you? Are you going to be sad about it? Are you stupid? you better wake up. You better coffee.
Yeah. Okay. I guess, yeah.
You train a William Guthrie who's trying to come find me. It just so happened he gets knocked out by Richard Johnson, somebody else that you also trained, who I ended up having to beat in the way. So you train a guy to try to beat me.
Okay.
So you think I'm going to really care about what you think or how you feel about me? Hell no.
Fair enough.
You don't care about me. You won't get me beat. You have to try to train a guy to go beat me.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're an enemy now, and you'll stay an enemy for the rest of my life. I mean, I don't hate you, but you're an enemy on my eyes. I never trust you.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that doesn't change now. You're not that type of person.
No. I never trust you. No. That won't ever change.
What are you going to do with all this free time you have in retirement now?
Well, I train fighters now.
Okay.
I'm training Isaac Salema right now to fight B. Bold in a week and a half. I got another guy I'm training, Shady Gamora, from I'll be fighting August 10th. So I train and promote some guys, but I do more training than I do promote them because I really love training guys.
Do you? And will your fighters fight in a similar style to you? Or do you tailor it?
So what I try to do is make that better at whatever you got. So it's like, I don't want to turn you into Roy Jones.
Mm.
I want to take whatever gift you got and make you the best at that gift that I can. Some guys are going to be exceptional fast like Roy was. Some guys are going to be exceptional powerful like Tyson was.
Mm.
Some guys are going to have a big heart like Holyfield. It ain't fair to fighters to try to turn everybody into what Roy Jones was. That's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to make them the best them that they can be, and that's what my goal is.
Just a last point, because you've been very good with your time. You mentioned like this kind of mad thing of watching roosters, watching cockfighting growing up, and almost mimicking or learning from them. Like for someone like, so I've never been to a cockfight, and it's illegal here. It's now illegal all over the United States. Like it strikes me from afar as just like the most barbaric, horrific thing. And for a kid watching it, I don't know, just do you now look at the sport in a different light to when you were a kid growing up? Like, do you still love the sport even though it's illegal? Because, you know, to most people, it's just animal cruelty and nothing else.
So what is MMA?
How do you feel about the sport today?
What is MMA?
What's MMA?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's two humans who are choosing to fight and there's a set of rules.
Okay, so if your 16-year-old son accidentally looks at his cell phone and hits somebody and kills him, he going to prison. Do you think they're going to care who they put him in the cell with?
No.
Okay, he can be in the cell with the worst killer or the worst rapist in the world. They still going to put his ass in the cell with him, right?
Sure.
And these are human beings we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So if we were so humane, we're about human beings, and we're about cruelty so bad, we wouldn't take people who have sometimes their first incident and throw them in prison with some of the worst living people and the worst minded people in the world. Mm. We have more consideration about them to all around. We were such caring people, right? But we don't. Just like when we go and we go arrest people for cockfighting, you know, they do the rules, they go kill every one of them. But what's the difference in letting them fight for his life, or you just going to go kill him because of what he is? There's no difference. So I don't feel no different, no. Because I feel like, yeah, they're animals, they'll fight to the death. Well, so are two skunks. It's just natural. It's what they do. But you tell me we care more about an animal than we care about my child, because my 18-year-old son right now goes out and have a wreck, asking to kill somebody. Then when they put him in prison, they don't give a care who they stick him in prison. Well, it could be 10 guys that are going to try to rape him and do everything. They don't care. So don't tell me about how humane something is. If we was humane, we have some more control of what happened to people when we send them off to prison. We don't care what happened to them when we send them off to prison.
Yeah. Well,
we don't care at all.
What happens?
Oh, they did something wrong.
What happens?
If we were humane, it's a way to humanely punish people.
What happens to an 18-year-old, and the example you're using of being in prison, that might not be right either, but that's also just separate.
It ain't right. Yeah, it's a human being, ain't no damn chicken, it's a human being.
But
we kill 20 million
separate.
Chickens a day to eat anyway. It's the same with them chickens. They didn't ask to be eaten. And the 20 million of them getting killed a day to eat. They didn't ask for that.
Sure.
Also called because you kill them fast, that's okay. No, it's not okay. You're still killing every damn one of them to eat them.
Mm. But then again,
so what's the difference?
Well, two wrongs don't make a right. And just because what happens to an 18-year-old...
But you want to punish one, but you don't want to punish that. Or you want to, like I said, there's a whole lot of things going wrong.
Yeah.
So we all want to talk about a damn chicken. Them chickens ain't affecting nobody. Them people that deal with them chickens ain't affecting nobody. They're not doing nothing bad to human beings. We got people going around bombing countries, killing kids, stealing kids and selling body parts of kids, human beings. And we more worried about chickens, animals, than we are about those things happening. But our focus is on, oh, it's so bad to let two roosters fight to death already. But it's okay for a person to go steal my daughter and go sell her, and now she become a prostitute from the time she 12 till she get found, huh? That's okay, huh? No, it's not. But that's more, but the chicken is just as important as my daughter is. No, it's not. But we spend so much time and effort on worrying about something that don't really even matter. Who gives a damn about you? We kill 20 million of them a day to eat. Who gives a damn about a chicken? We kill 20 million of them a day to eat. The guys that raise chickens for that, they love those chickens. They care for those chickens like you care for your dog. That was people that don't know about cockfighting. That's what they don't understand. People that do that, they care for them chicken more than most people care for their dog. They're not inhumane. If they had it that way, that chicken would never lose. But they know in a sport, they like football, they like boxing. They're going to be winners and they're going to be losers. But they don't mean for the day after they say, oh, I just love this chicken to kill. That's not what they're doing.
Mm. But would you not agree it's just a needlessly, horrifically awful death for the rooster, and it's all just for the pleasure of people watching?
Say what now?
Would you not agree it's the most horrifically cruel death for the roosters, and that it is just cruelty?
No, I wouldn't agree with that.
You know, their beaks are sharpened, they have instruments put in their feet, it's all just designed.
Their beaks don't get sharpened, but no, I wouldn't agree with that. No, I would not.
You wouldn't agree it's the most horrifically cruel, painful death for them?
No, I would not agree. Well, I think the most horrific thing is to have, like I said, 18-year-old kids in the prison, and 12 people get him there, and then take him and gang rape him and bang him, and he ain't did nothing wrong necessarily.
But nobody wants that to happen either.
That's what I think is cruel and inhumane.
But nobody wants that to happen either. Like, just because that happens doesn't make the cockfighting right.
Come on, bro.
Sure, but I mean, I'm talking to you because you like cockfighting. I mean, if we were talking about the prison system, I'd talk to you about the prison system.
We eat 20 million chickens a day.
Sure.
The people that do that cockfight, whatever they do, that's their business. That's what they do. The people that smoke pot, the people that get high, the people that do a lot of things that I don't necessarily agree with, that's their business.
Mm.
But I don't think nothing inhumane more about no damn chicken than I think about anything else. So,
yeah.
No, I don't think that's inhumane. Thank you. Goodbye.
But
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.